The Effenrad Snowboard Podcast is presented by Vans.
Oh yeah, I wanted to be absolutely not attractive to snowboarders.
Maybe we need an injection of that, because it'd be interesting.
And I didn't sign the contract, I probably just had it in my bag for a couple months.
And we're like, oh, that's just banging, let her run.
We pushed each other to become better.
Front three tailed it.
Season 5 of the Effenrad Snowboard Podcast is sponsored by Wired Snowboards, the Boardroom Snowboard Shop, Crow's Nest Barbershops, Anon Optics, and Tribute Board Shop in Nelson, BC. Support for the show also comes from Grouse Mountain, Mount Seymour, where I'm recording this intro, and Cypress Mountain, the three local mountains of Vancouver. Thanks to all of you who supported the show this year. Wired Snowboards has their very own factory here in Vancouver, BC, where they make all their custom graphic boards and all their split boards. I rode a Trek series this week and actually split it into skis. It's a quick way to move around the mountain, and switching from the board to the skis is fast and simple. This week, we'll be doing a raffle for a custom wired board, any shape, any size, including the Trek split board. Tickets will be $20, and there will be 100 of them. And everyone who enters gets a limited edition Effenrad sticker, a Boardroom sticker, a Van sticker, and some people will get Volcom stickers. The Boardroom is offering a prize of a hoodie. They've got lots of sizes and colors to choose from, so the winner's going to be stoked. I'll put up a post on Facebook on the Effenrad page, and we'll be accepting PayPal or e-transfers. Now, if you lost your job and still want to participate but can't afford the $20, then just email me at effenradpodcast@hotmail.com, and we'll get you in the draw. Go to wiredsnowboards.com and check out their lineup of boards and pick one to design, man. Check it out. This week's guest is Dave Downing. He's from Southern California, a Burton team rider in the 90s and into the 2000s. He had a lot to do with the split board in the early days, and you'll hear that in the show. All right, here's my interview with legendary snowboarder Dave Downing. You've been in good shape your whole life,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so, yeah, but I'm 52, so it's like my got a physical, and they're like, yeah, you should probably, you know.
Cut out the eggs or whatever?
Just keep it low. I don't have really high cholesterol, but I definitely need to, like, watch it, you know.
What about, like, blood pressure?
My blood pressure is killer, like.
Mine's terrible.
You know, stuff like that. My heart and everything like that. But the older you get, you got to have all these physicals. But I am in good shape.
Yeah, because from surfing, I'd imagine.
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I don't work out too much.
Right. You don't go to a gym?
I do a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, usually in the fall, I'll go to the gym. It's more swimming and a little bit of, I had an ankle injury, so I went to the gym, kind of worked out my ankle quite a bit, you mm-hmm. know, stuff like that. But I normally don't go to the gym a lot. I just surf and, you know.
Yeah. I'm supposedly training for the Mount Baker Bank Slalom, but I had bigger ambitions than it turns out.
I think the only way to train for that is just ride a lot.
Ride. Yeah, that's what
I go to Whistler and just ride top to bottom all
fast.
Day long.
Get used to going as fast as you can
all
possibly
day long,
go.
You know, kind of there's not a lot of training for snowboarding, I don't think, except for snowboarding.
Did you train when you were a pro?
No, like,
did
not you? At all. I just swam and rode the bike afterwards. Like after riding, I would ride a bike, like a stationary bike, on very low resistance just to flush out all that lactic acid and stuff like that. But I never trained.
Right, yeah. Right, right.
Yeah. I was a rep in Southern California.
Right.
In 1990 to like 93. And then I met Shannon.
Yeah.
In 94 in Europe, because the team manager at the time, Eric Koch, called me and he's like, hey, Cersei Walsh just blew her knee out. She can't go on this trip to Italy. Can you go? And I'm like, dude, I don't have a passport, but I got one. And I'm like, okay.
Oh, wow.
And I wasn't I was a rep in Southern California. And I went to Europe, to Italy, and I met Jeff Curtis on that trip. And I met Shannon, my wife, on that trip.
Yep.
So after that trip, I came back. I'm like, whoa. This is crazy. You know, I just had a bunch of photos in the magazine and Transworld and all this stuff was, you know, but I was still a rep. And I was actually at Vegas, showing the line there in Vegas, and Shannon came, and I already had like a crush on Shannon. She's like, oh, you should come to Utah. And then, so like I go to Utah and Shannon's like, tells MacDog, like, hey, can this guy, Dave, my friend Dave, come out, you know? And he's just like, no. And she totally shut me down. You know, I'm like, okay, whatever. And then he goes, well, he can go out with Kurt. And this kid, Peter. And that's kind of what started. Yeah. I went out with Kurt Heine and Peter Line, and us three went out for 2 or 3 days.
Perfect.
In Utah, like in Grizzly Gulch and all these different places. And
rad.
Just started building stuff, and I didn't know what I was doing, you know, and we just kind of sessioned, and that was kind of the beginning of that. And then I came back from that day, and I remember, or not that day, but those 3 days, and then Mac Dog was like, oh, I want to ride with Dave. So I went out with Mac Dog for like, I think a day, one day up Grizzly Gulch, and we filmed some stuff. I think Dave Lee was there that day. And sick. then he's like, okay, dude, I started getting baked, I think, in Utah. And he's like, you got to go to Tahoe and meet Mike Hatchett and let's film. And I'm like, really? And I'm like, okay. And I think I flew there on my own money, you know, and just ended up, I remember this too. The first day I met Mike Hatchett, I go to Squaw, and I was with Shannon actually, and we flew there. We're going to go meet Mike Hatchett in the Palisades at Squaw. Like, they were filming up there because the chair was closed and stuff. And they had like special privilege to film there.
Jeez.
Because this is before like really filming in the backcountry kind of happened.
And yeah. Yeah.
So they're in the Palisades, and I go up there, and I like remember I met Mike Hatchett, and he's like super intense. I'm like, whoa, this is crazy. And then you know who's there was Tex Davenport.
Oof.
And he was gnarly. He had headphones on. He's like hiking the Palisades, and he's just dropping cliffs. I'm just like, this is out of my league. Like, I didn't know what I was doing. I'm like this kid from Big Bear, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember just watching Tex, like what he's doing. I just like, and then Mike's like, okay, you want to do something? I'm like, I didn't even know what to do. And I'm just kind of watched Tex. And then I just kind of, I think I can go over there and like jump off that little cliff and kind of cruise over there.
Yeah, yeah,
I
yeah.
remember I did a couple of lines there, and then I stayed a couple of days with Mike in Tahoe. And that's kind of what happened, I think.
So the Palisades thing, like, cause I went to Sugar Bowl Palisades. Mm-hmm. Is that a whole other?
It's similar. It's just like like the Palisades at Squaw is just like this upper mountain, like little cirque area.
It's a zone, right?
Like a zone, a little cliff area. You know, it's at a ski resort, though.
Yeah, but it's crazy that it's at a ski resort.
But that's how we used to film.
Yeah, if you were like a skier at the ski resort, you wouldn't be looking at that going, maybe we'll go down there with little Timmy. It's like,
no, it's like you gotta kind of go up there, hike up there, and get after it. Yeah.
And in those days, nobody would maybe hit some
not
of that,
that
stuff
many
too,
hit
right?
That stuff. Yeah. So that's how we used to film, though. In the first few movies,
that's insane.
Either at ski resorts or kind of side country, kind of stuff. Like if you look at Terrier's part from TB2, mm-hmm. it's almost all on the mountain run at Squaw. Probably 60% of the shots were on the mountain run.
I gotta
Squaw
go back
Valley.
And watch it.
That's and insane. All those hits and all that stuff, like he just tore it up. Like him, and then Breckenridge, Mount Hood, and Squaw Valley. That's where TB2 was filmed. His part, which is insane.
That is insane. That's nuts. Yeah, I want to go back and watch that with that knowledge now of that zone.
Yeah,
yeah. The Hatchett line on Squaw.
Dave Hatchett's line. Under the was pretty cool.
It's a beautiful line.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful line. And seeing it in real life and
did he tell you a story when he hiked it early in the morning? And
he told the whole thing. Yeah, it was insane. Mm-hmm. Well, because I was up there and somebody else told me the story. So we still call that Hatchett line.
It is, yeah.
The Ski Patrol told me that.
Yeah, I was like,
whoa, really? That's insane. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. And I mean, he deserves that line.
For sure.
What he put in there.
For sure.
Sedway shot it from the parking lot, right? Yeah. Which is it's so nuts to see these zones and be like, that's where that went down.
Yeah.
Like, because now you think of how far out in the backcountry things happen. It's almost insane. So let's go all the way back to the beginning, because I know you've got some historical references from Jake, obviously, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you worked with him for a really long time.
Yep.
Sorry for the loss. I mean, that's a big theme of the show this year is obviously Jake passing away is a big deal. And I know you went to... and hung out and had some good times with everybody, right?
Yeah.
What year? So he starts the company in 77, right? Mm-hmm. So this year, when I went to Snowbird, I spoke with Jeff Davis and that Wasatch crew. They were riding the lifts at Alta in 79.
Right.
Lift access, snowboarding, 79 through 81. Was Jake on any lifts in those years? Or were those guys the absolute first to have a mountain that was open Okay,
no,
go ahead.
I mean, I wasn't there. I wasn't even snowboarding. I was just surfing back then, right? So I don't really totally know from a hands-on experience, but just from like Jake telling me, and Todd Coleman from Burton knows every history about everything. But anyways, and Mark Heidengardner and all these guys. But anyways, you know, Jake was on the East Coast. He loved it.
Yeah.
You know, he was surfing, and then he started his, you know, snowboard company, and he believed in it. That was a sport.
Yeah.
And yeah, there weren't really any ski resorts that would just allow you to go up the lift, right? So he's going around trying to convince these ski resorts, like, hey, you know, I want to go up your lift. And they're basically barring him from going up a lift.
Right.
And he kept, you know, knocking on those doors, really, year after year.
Yeah.
And I don't know, the first year that, like, I think it was Stratton started it, allowing you, but they made you take a test.
Yes.
And you had to get a certification to, like, be able to ride down the hill.
I think that might be 84 or something like that. Like, it's not like, so, it's after these guys. I think these guys have a legitimate claim that they're because of Dimitri and the Wasatch.
Oh, as far as lift access,
access. I think
not Don or something. There's a Tahoe. There's a,
oh yeah, you're right. There is a Tahoe.
One of the resorts in Tahoe.
Yeah.
I'm getting my history messed up because I don't really know it. But
yeah, you're not
there is a resort in Tahoe that allowed it from the beginning.
I think it was Donner. I'm pretty sure it was.
Something like that. But
yeah, I think that's why those guys are there.
And then, you know, the Tahoe scene, like Kidwell and the whole scene, those guys are freestyle guys, skaters, and doing their deal, which was awesome. And Jake wasn't that. He was a surfer
in
ski racing, and it was like, that's what the East Coast was, you know?
Yeah, so you know where I fall on it. I don't think there was ever that Jake versus Tom thing in real life. Like, Jake and Tom were rivals, sure, but there was definitely that Sims versus Craig.
For sure.
That lawsuit, it sounds more like it was Brad Dorfman versus Craig. It wasn't like Tom just was never that involved with the company like Jake was.
No, totally. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, like, I think they both played it up a little bit because it's a great story. Mm-hmm. At the time when I started snowboarding, you know, Burton versus Sims, they both had really good teams. They both had really good models. Yeah. And it looked for a year or two there like something was going to happen for Sims.
I think competitiveness.
That didn't happen.
Yeah, competitiveness in anything kind of makes somebody strive to be higher. Right.
Whether
it's baseball or business or snowboarding or, you know, half pipe riding or whatever. Like, if you have a rival, surfing, for instance, if you have a rival, you're going to take your game to the next level.
Totally.
And that's how a lot of things, I think, progress, you know?
Yeah.
And Jake was definitely really competitive.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Sure. Cool.
For sure. But in a good way, you know, like.
Sure. He never tried to put people out of business. He just was like, I want my business.
He just wanted to be the best. And he wanted the sport to progress a lot, you know, like a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And he was really successful in that. I think that's where Craig probably got that drive too, right? Like, when he aligned himself with Jake, he was like, oh, finally, a company that's run by somebody that snowboards like passionately and sees the vision of the sport. I think, not that Tom didn't see it, just that Craig wasn't riding for Tom. He was riding for Dorfman. That's the thing.
I don't really know how that happened. I just know that, like, Craig, when he, you know, was with Burton in the beginning, and Burton was listening, Jake specifically was like really listening to him and asking him questions and like, hey, how should we do this? What should we do this? How should we do that? And he was giving Jake input in, like, hey, we should do this with our bindings, or we should do this with that board. We should do outerwear. I mean, the Burton AK line is because of Craig, kind of. And I remember I was there, like, he was into it. He's like, hey, all these, you know, ski guides have all this, you know, North Face stuff, and it's all sick and whatever. It doesn't fit right. It's all whack. Looks like a skier. I want that technology, but I want to look like a snowboarder.
Right.
And that's kind of what that happened, you know, like when AK started, when we started doing that stuff. Because
That's sick. Mm-hmm. And that's a great legacy too. Yeah. So then the second part of that would be the split board thing. Cause I know that you're that history you're more in.
Well,
here's the thing. I've got two claims. We got John Buffery, who, you know, in 87 had a split board that he made. So that's 87. That's early.
For sure. No, there are people who splitboard a lot. Like, Nitro had a splitboard way back. Like,
really?
Yeah.
Oh,
like,
I didn't
way
know.
Back in Europe. I don't even know what year. Like I said, I have no idea.
Yeah.
Vole made splitboards. And I know Nitro made splitboards.
So these,
mainly European kind of stuff, you know, hard boot thing. But
yeah.
I can just tell you what my experience is with split boarding and how that kind of happened and stuff, and with Craig and all that.
Yeah, what was your first split board?
I kind of told you in the beginning of this interview, you know, I started filming.
Yeah.
And I lived in Southern California. I'm a Big Bear kid, right?
Yeah.
And I met Craig, and Craig's influence on me was like, dude, you better get real, you know, like you're going to, what are you going to do? Play in the park all day.
Right.
And so I wanted to like learn to free ride. So I moved to Utah and I lived at Tina Bassage's house in Utah and I started filming. And, the next, let me think up the years here. It was probably 95 ish when I was TB4, TB5, somewhere in there.
Yep.
And Brad Schaffel was a friend of mine and he rode for Burton, but he worked at Salty Peaks and then he worked at Mila, but I think he was working at Salty Peaks at that time. And I was in there, I wanted to get a board tuned. I went in and I saw it was a Vole split board. It was on this wall and it was like a demo or a rental or whatever. And I'm like, whoa, how's that thing? Because in that time I was hiking out at Brighton, trying to learn about the backcountry, you know, and all this, kind of on my own, basically.
I
didn't have like a guide showing me around. I'm like, hey, can I go over there? Is it safe? And I'm learning. I took an avalanche course and I'm like trying to be safe, but I'm trying to learn about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm hiking around. I started filming in that zone behind Brighton.
Cool.
Let me think about that. That was TB4 and that was with Dave Lee. And Mike Hatchin was an epic year in Utah. And I filmed, I think, my whole TB4 part behind Brighton.
Rad.
But it was all hiking, like boot packing, snowshoe, you know, hiking.
No, and sorry to derail you, but Brighton accesses that back bowl, right?
Is that right? So Brighton and Solitude are in Big Cottonwood Canyon.
Yeah.
And then Snowbird and Alta are in Little Cottonwood Canyon.
Yep.
But those canyons kind of connect at the top. And so all four of those ski resorts are basically right there.
Yeah.
So if you hike out of Brighton, you can hike a little bit and you could be at Alta.
Right.
And you could hike to Snowbird if you had to, right?
Right.
It's pretty close.
Yeah.
So I'm back in that area kind of hiking around, filming and stuff in snowshoes. And then I would see these Telemark skiers. And I'm like, dude, that's crazy. Look at that zigzag thing going up. And they would just kind of squiggle down and make their little turns, you know, but they're having a great time, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, dude, these guys are, I wonder, that's crazy, you know? And I didn't know anything about it. And then I saw that split board and then Brad's like, dude, you can use that thing. They dropped it off here and you can just check it. I'm like, whoa, it had skins with it and everything. I'm like, whoa, crazy, okay. And I took it and I remember like using it in the same place I used to hike.
Yeah.
And just like a light bulb went off. I'm like, I can go up on the same thing I'm coming down on. I don't have to carry my board.
Yeah.
It's totally easy to hiking in like 2-3 feet of pow and it's easy. And I'm getting like 5 or 6 runs instead of one or two.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, wait a minute. And the board did work. It actually worked because I'm riding pow, right? I'm like, whatever.
Yeah. Low impact.
So I come back from that. I'm like, that was crazy. I had it for 2 days, you know, and then I gave it back to him. And the first thing I do is like get home and I call JG at Burton.
Yeah.
And I go, dude, we got to make a split board. And he's just kind of, what are you talking about? You know, and then, and then I kept begging him. And then I think the first one he made, he just kind of cut a custom down the middle and we kind of put it together and it was like pretty rude, you know, but it was too soft. It had Vole pucks on it. And I rode it for a little bit. And I'm all, we need to make one stiffer with edges. And then we made a couple of those prototypes. And then I got one, I think, a year or two after maybe, and it was pretty good. And I started filming on it with Mike.
Yeah.
And I was hiking because I would like, we had to hike some line stuff because our snowmobiles really weren't that good back then.
Yep.
So I filmed a little bit for maybe 2 movies with a split board that had a custom graphic on the bottom.
I remember it. I remember the board.
So nobody really knew what it was at that time because it had a custom graphic on it, right? You wouldn't even have known. It was like, and then couple years later,
there was something about it. I think maybe a magazine did an article about it.
It was, this was later when the red and yellow one, you know, one ski was red and one ski was yellow. That's the first one we like produced.
Yeah.
And so I kind of pushed Burton to make that, you know, and begged him and, you know, blah, blah, blah. After a few years, they made it. And a guy from Black Diamond helped, and Paul Merovitz, who started Rome, we made the interface, that Burton interface, you know, the split board interface. And basically we produced that split board and the year before it even came out, yeah, it was at least a year before it came out, year and a half, I had one, and I'm like, I'm going to film my whole video part on this thing because I believe in it. And I know it's not meant for this, but like, I need to kind of prove, because everybody doubted split boards and all those don't work, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And I'm like, no, they do work. And I remember people at Burton telling me reps, all those don't work, blah, blah. And I'm like, dude, they freaking work. You know, they're insane. And I'm like, I'm going to film a video part and I'm going to prove to people that they work.
Yeah.
So I went out, I had a goal, you know, I'm like, Mike, I told Mike, and he's kind of thought I was crazy, you know, but then I started getting shots on it, you know, and yeah, I would hike lines and do stuff like that. But I was like trying to hit cliffs and jumps, and I was going out with UC and Kevin Jones, and, yeah, and like, yeah. I'm like, okay, I'm going to try to do a cab seven on this jump on a freaking split board that weighs 50 pounds, you know, like,
yeah.
So yeah, I did that year. And then I had a decent video part. And this is funny. This is a whole other part of the story. But
yeah.
So Jeremy Jones from Utah, you know, Jibber Jeremy Jones, right? A friend of mine. He like, this is, you know, Nixon Jib Fest time, right? And he's like, heard about me. He's like, I heard you're riding a split board. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to film a whole video part. And he's like, no, you're not. And I would always, bet Jeremy things, you know, and he would always win.
Yeah.
Because I'd bet him, I'd be on a rail trip with Jeremy. I'm like, oh, you can't do that on that rail. And he'd be like, $100. And I'd bet him, and he'd do it. And he'd always take $100 off me. And so finally, I'm like, I'll bet you. And so we bet $200 that I was going to film a video part.
Sick.
And it's funny because I just got the money like 2 years ago.
Are you
Yeah,
serious?
He finally paid up. Yeah, he finally paid up.
That's amazing.
But anyways, I did that. And then, you know, I knew we were making it. And I'm like, okay. So I talked to the PR people at Burton. And I'm like, hey, we're making this thing and nobody knows about it. Nobody knows what splitboarding is. And they set me up on this pretty crazy like PR tour in New York. So I went to New York in the summer with a board bag with a splitboard in there. And I had a little cut of that video part. And like, I basically went to all these weird magazines like Vogue and Outside Magazine and all these weird like mainstream magazines. And I would just kind of talk to the editor about, hey, and I'd show them the split board, show them how it works, show them how to take it apart, put it back together. And like, this is what it is. And here's the proof that it actually works. And
yeah,
so I did that for like a week basically.
Yeah.
And then we made that board and we sold it.
Did you get press? Was there...
Yeah.
They did press?
No, there was a bunch of like...
Articles
and magazine stuff. And this was kind of before the internet, really. It was like... There wasn't a whole lot of that. It was mostly press, like, you know, magazines and stuff.
Yeah.
So that happened. And then the part with Craig. So Craig was really... I mean, he was my mentor, totally, and I looked up to him so much. He taught me so much about everything, and he was really into, like, product development with Burton, with JG and stuff, and I remember he was making these, like, they all look like boat hulls, like prototypes, and he was really into hydrodynamics and powder, and, like, riding boards and powder, and the guy had so much flow, right, and he wanted to just flow and powder, so he's making these really cool pow boards with Burton, and he didn't want to have anything to do with, you know, split boarding, or he didn't think they worked. Yeah. And I was going on this trip that Craig set up. It was, let me think, it was me, Joe Curtis, Craig, Jeff Curtis, damn, I think Dave Cione was there.
Sick.
And we were going to North Cascade Heli to stay in a yurt, like they have this yurt thing there. And we were going there, and Craig set it all up, and we were going there, and I'm like, a month or two before, I told JG, like, let's make a split board for Craig, and like, you know. So we made one, and I brought it to him on that trip.
That was
his first, like, oh, you know, he was kind of like, oh, like,
oh, geez,
well, okay, cool. And then it started dumping. This is what's cool about this trip is it started dumping, and it snowed like for, I think, like 8 days straight. It was just snowing, and Joe was there, and he had snowshoes. So me and Craig had split boards, and we were just going behind this yurt, skinning up and getting the sickest runs. And Craig's like, this is sick. Like, oh, and we were getting like, you know, 7 or 8 runs, and Joe would do like one and be like, I'm over it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and we're like, stay out of our skin track. Joe's trying to walk in our skin track, you know, we're just like, totally. And,
it is insane how much faster it is with the skin track.
And then dude, like a light bulb went off in Craig's brain, and just like, he just took it to a whole new level, and he just wanted to be a certified mountain guide in Canada, and just, dude, he took it to a whole new level, you know.
Totally. Totally.
And I know he loved it. Absolutely loved it. Just being out there and not just traveling that way in the backcountry, you know?
Yeah.
Without a heli and without just going out and being out. And
it's very calming. For yeah, sure. For sure. It sucks for me because I can't ski. So any amount downhill, I'm just toast.
Craig, we used to actually take our skins off just for fun and go down these little hills, like with no skins, and like downhill and ski just for fun. Like Craig's like, let's ski this hill. And like we would do that. It was pretty fun, but yeah.
He seems like he was such a fun dude just to hang out with. Like whether you're skiing, snowboarding, drinking and having a conversation, whatever.
He was articulate in the way he spoke, and the way he explained things. He was really funny, really kind of a prankster funny, like really witty, you know, really witty.
Yeah.
But he was just great to be around, yeah.
His daughter is in Vancouver. So I met her at the Absinthe premiere, and I was like, wow.
Yeah. She's going to school to be an engineer, dude. She showed me a photo. I just saw her back in Vermont, and like, dude, I'm getting goosebumps right now. But her window in her dorm where she's staying, she opens her window and she shows me a photo and she can see Mount Baker from her window.
Oh, that's epic.
It's just like, dude, I was just like so choked and teared up. And but yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, it's incredible. When she told Burton she was going to school to be an engineer, the first thing they said was, "Where are you going to do your practicum?" And she's like, "Well, I don't know." And they're like, "You're going to do it right here." Like, so she's going to get her work experience for her course in Vermont.
It's crazy, yeah.
It's so rad. Yeah. It's so rad.
She's awesome, too. Like, she's...
really super...
awesome.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's got her life together. Mm-hmm. And you can tell that she's just smart as a whip. Mm-hmm. And she's got she's got that look, too. She looks a lot like his sister. Mm-hmm. Like, almost exactly the same. So, yeah, that's... the legacy's... it's just still going. So, that's amazing. Yeah, I mean,
but that's a splitboard story. I don't know. That's kind of how it happened. And so the years were like 95.
That's pretty early when I started,
you know. Yep. But I know they existed before that for sure.
Oh yeah,
definitely,
yeah.
You know, I would imagine Buff had one back then for sure.
I think the guys in Utah had it earlier. I think somebody at the shop cut one in like 85.
There was like Nitro ones way back. Both those Velay ones. Dude, I used to. This guy Cowboy, some people listening to this might know who he is. He's this guy, he's an avalanche forecaster, or he was when I would live there in Utah, and he was a splitboarder, and I would see him back there, and I'm like, whoa, there's this, you know, like, there's another guy splitboarding. And he was splitboarding way before me, you know?
Yeah.
So there was definitely way.
Yeah, there's some deep history in Utah that I think.
For sure. It just it's so perfect for splitboarding.
Oh,
there.
My God.
You know,
it's
you can't really snowmobile. Yeah. It's pretty steep. It's like these big long runs. It's like perfect. You know, it's like a mini little Europe thing.
It is. Yeah.
So it's awesome. Canyon to canyon. You could take a bus up one canyon and split go. I used to take one bus up and spend all day back in the Cottonwood Canyons. And then you end up at the other canyon and take a bus home. You know, it's perfect for it. So.
Yeah.
Definitely there's a big split culture there. All I did was just kind of believe that they worked when nobody else really did. Yeah. And I think I had a platform to kind of show that, like, hey, this worked. And a lot of people saw that video part. They didn't even know I was writing a splitboard. Some people did, but it would be like early 2000s, I guess, right? 2000, 2001, 2002.
Oh, yeah, there. Probably like TB. That's like...
because TB9 was that...
TB9's the 99 one, right?
That was the splitboard part, and I don't know what year that was. It was probably 90...
99, I think they line up.
They kind of line up, sort of. So somewhere around there. I don't know.
Yeah, unreal.
I kind of black out with dates. I don't even remember.
Yeah, I rode with Dave Hatchett down in Tahoe, and I'm telling you, it was such an experience.
He's epic.
The whole Tahoe scene is epic. Mm-hmm. The whole... Utah scene is epic. Mm-hmm. So you moved around.
I lived in Utah for 8 years, something like that, in the winter. I'm always from Southern California, so I always come back here. But Utah, and then I moved to Tahoe.
You did a year in Tahoe.
No, I lived there. I had a house there. I lived there because I got married in 99, right?
Yeah.
And like, hey, I'm married. I want to live. I love Tahoe, and I knew I could like work there and film there.
Yeah.
And so I moved there in 99. And so 99 to 2008, I think, when we sold our house. So I lived there for those years. So
oh, wow.
9 years in Tahoe.
So the kids first. The
kids were born. Yeah. Logan was born in Tahoe, or he was born down here, but he was a little baby. He was in Tahoe. Yeah.
Of school, we're in Tahoe still.
Yeah. And Shannon used to get pissed because I'd go out and film all day and she's like home with Logan, you know, like.
What a, right? Going from that snowboarder lifestyle.
Sacrificed a lot.
Oh, yeah, man. That's big, right?
It was gnarly, yeah.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
And being in Tahoe, it's like, well, it's not here, right? Here is like a million people doing a million
Southern
things.
California, that's what he's referring to.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's and then you're in Tahoe and you're kind of in this Tahoe
super mellow
zone.
Super mellow. We live in North Lake Tahoe and it's pretty mellow, you know. And I still love Tahoe. People ask me that, like, where's your favorite place to ride? And I'm like, well, the Sierra Nevadas for sure.
I think I would agree with
you. Just because I know it really well and I got to spend 15 years of my life selfishly, like really selfishly, going out every day and just
the fall line is really
going out with Dave Hatchett on recon missions for a couple 3 days and like, let's find some sick stuff, and like we would just go find stuff, you know. And that's, I'm really fortunate that I got to live that way, you know.
Yeah, that's a blessed life right there,
for sure, for sure. And at the time I didn't know it, you know. I was just like, but now I look back, I'm like, oh my gosh, like every day I could just go out. And
where's Kings Beach? Is that North Lake?
Kings Beach is North Lake. Yeah, that's right near where I live.
So Tom Burt is...
Yep, Tom lives right by where I live.
Right up there. Yeah. I stayed for a little bit right there.
Tom's a huge, huge inspiration. Tom, Dave Hatchett, Noah Slaznik are probably my top guys that like I learned things from. And Craig, too. But like when I was actually filming and doing things and being a total rookie,
I
would say those three. Noah taught me a lot about how to come into a line and not like white room myself and like you know, things like that. And just because he was just a master at that. Dave Hatchett, just he was really like calming and good to be with, and Mike too, for sure, because I was with Mike a lot filming. But both those guys were really calming and like, you know, I'd be pretty scared, you know, always filming, and they would make me calm and kind of like, oh yeah, you can do that, you can go down that, and you can go see that tree, and they're really like into it, and that you just go left of that tree and you're gonna make that or whatever.
Yeah,
like, you know,
I love
like, okay, and then like, I would go try to do it, you know.
I had that day with Dave. I mean, riding Homewood, it's low angle trees. It was like,
but he's just as intense at Homewood as he is in Alaska. Like he's just psyched. Like
psyched.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm not sure what run you want to do next time, but I'd suggest we go to the left of those trees and we'll bag that bowl, and then it's a bit of a traverse to the right. And it's like,
he's totally like that. He's awesome.
It's the most fun. Yeah. That's how I aspire to be like that. Like, I hope if I take people to my home mountain that I'm showing them that great stuff in enthusiastic way.
Well, he's super giving and like, you know, he's not like selfish. He's like, oh,
zero.
Those guys are really giving, you know.
So did you film with MacDog, and that's kind of a little bit confusing because MacDog and Standard would eventually come to be kind of like the rivaling crews.
Well, they came together, you know. So like TB2, they came together. TB2 was, you know, Mike Hatchett and Mike McIntyre.
Yeah,
they got together.
Yeah,
and they, you know, came out with what's I think is the best movie ever, TB2.
It
like
is
nuts, right? It's all this gnarly freestyle stuff that MacDog had, and all this gnarly freeride stuff that Mike Hatchett had, and they put them together in a movie, and it was just like, holy, you know. So they did TB2, TB3, TB4, TB5. They did four movies together, full projects, you know, both in the editing room, fighting over what's cooler and whatnot, you know.
Yeah.
Because Mike McIntyre is a hardcore freestyle guy, right?
Progression.
And Mike Hatch is this hardcore Alaska stuff. So they were always fighting on what's going to... But it made the movies really, really awesome.
Amazing, yeah.
So, but then after TB5... You know, that was right around that time, I think, was with the Trans World Video Magazine. So MacDog was doing those and filming for Standard, right? And then he's like, and then Forum happened, and that, and Mike's like, hey, I'm going to go do my freestyle.
Because Mike had his own movies too with Pocahontas.
That was before Standard Films, though.
That was before, right.
So he did, you know, Pocahontas, New Kids in the Twok, Hard, the Hungry, and the Homeless, like mental freestyle stuff, right?
Oh,
and then he got together with Mike Hatchett and did those four Standard Films movies.
Then he left. Yeah.
Mike McIntyre left.
Yeah.
And he did the Forum stuff and Decade and just started doing
He had a couple before the Forum ones that were just
gnarly
like
freestyle movies.
Technical difficulties.
Yeah, totally.
And
so I filmed for that too.
You filmed for that. So you filmed for both. There's a couple of people that filmed
Sides. I did. I filmed, you know, I don't know how many MacDog parts, but it was pretty
That's intense.
Scary and stressful for me because I loved it. And I had friends on both crews. And I'm like, I want to be like Jeremy Jones. And, you know, I'm not that good, but I want to go do that.
Right.
Ride handrails.
Yeah.
And I want to go to Alaska with Noah. And I want to go hit jumps with Kevin Jones. And I want,
yeah,
like I wanted to do that, you know, and it was hard, but I would go on a rail trip with, you know, MacDog crew or do whatever.
Yeah.
Hit jumps with Brian Thien and the backcountry with Kurt Heine and just full freestyle film stuff.
Totally.
And I come home and see Shannon and I'm like, oh, I'm going to go film with Standard now. And I'd go for 2 weeks and go to Jackson Hole or wherever, you know, and film with a different board bag of bigger boards and whatever for that stuff. So
yeah,
I learned a lot, definitely.
Yeah, no doubt. And you're this one guy that straddled the line. Cause I know you go early hatchet, Dave straddled the line for sure, but he was in hard boots.
Dude,
and it was just like a weird time and wacky time for like, cause freestyle was so small.
Well, they were from Colorado. Like Dave was, you know, like the whole Colorado scene and like, Wave Rave and Mambo Sock and like that whole like log jib thing.
That's totally.
So freestyle was happening, you know, and then Dave was in Tahoe and freestyle was totally going on there. Like Noah Slaznik and all these dudes, like So he was definitely influenced.
I remember seeing a shot of him.
Dave hitting can do a rail. Stalefish 360, dude, no problem.
Him hitting a rail on like a 15-inch stance with hard boots. Yeah. On some avalanche board.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
But you were at that next era where you couldn't just... You had to stick your landing. There was no hand drags.
Oh, you could hand drag for sure. Could you? I hand dragged major.
Could you hand drag in those years?
I mean, yeah. I mean, MacDog was pretty cutthroat on stuff.
Yeah,
You know, if it was like... something new or something big or whatever.
And
get away with a little hand drag. The landings were pretty flat and stuff. We weren't making like really, I mean, I don't even know what year it was, but filming went from having fun, really fun, to being like, dude, this is stressful. Like it changed overnight because it was like, we were just going out, oh, let's just hit stuff. And
yeah.
You know, let's do this, jump off that cliff, sweet. We're just having killer time. And then all of a sudden, we're building stuff, and MacDog would be like, I'm not even going to film this jump. It's not big enough.
Not big
and we're
enough.
Like, what? Let's look at how sick this is. He's like, yeah, it's not worthy. And we're like, oh, shit. You know what I mean? Because he wanted to take it to a whole new level, and I totally get it.
Yeah.
You know? And
I know exactly what you mean, but it's like, yeah, so when you have this friendship with this guy, that's the
thing. He's still my friend.
That's the thing that I struggle with I didn't know I would struggle with was when I got out into the snow, I gave my kids the basics and they got to the level where it's like, okay, time to go in the park. And they're standing nervously at the top of the park. I didn't have it in me to be like, hit that jump, you know, like.
Oh, for your kids?
Yeah, because my kids are like, what if I get hurt? And I'm like, oh, you can't think what if I get hurt or you will get hurt. And then they're like, you think I got it? And all of a sudden I'm going, well, it can't come from me. You have to think you've got it.
I'm like, like the opposite. I was like telling my kids not to go in the park. I'm
exactly.
Like, don't go over there. They're like, let's go over there. I'm like, no, don't go over there.
So I'm thinking of that relationship between two grown men. When you're looking at your friend who's saying, Dave, you've got this.
Well,
and you're
going,
dude, I've got kids, man.
No,
I don't.
It was never like that. It was never ever like that. It was, you know, like both film crews, all the filmers that I have ever worked with were all like, you know, supportive of the writers that were there doing what they needed to do, you know?
Yeah.
But it's definitely you have to have somebody that kind of has your back. You're like, dude, I think I can go up, jump that cliff. And I think you see that landing right there? Does it look flat or does it look good?
Yeah.
And you have to have somebody to bounce that information off of.
Yes.
And especially when you're Alaska, dude, I remember my cat calling him like, is that spine? I think it's a spine. And you know, like,
yeah
that's it. You're going to be safe. If you go ride skiers, ride that spine, you're going to be good. And
watch like, for the little
you
rock.
You have to have that,
the tree.
You know,
yeah.
somebody to talk to.
Oh and, my and God, to, of course.
You know, but you've also got, you know, people that are just going to put you in your place, you know? And I got, that happened to me a lot, dude, because we're filming with 16 millimeter film that had to get transferred, right?
Yeah.
So we would go build stuff and do stuff. And I thought I had these shots, you know, I'm like sick. And then I would go over to Mike's house, and Noah's there, and Kevin Jones, and we're watching these beta tape transfers, and we're like, oh my God. And they're like, Kevin's like, oh, that would have been sick if you didn't flap, you know? And you're like,
totally,
gosh, dude, I thought that Cab 7 was sick, and it wasn't. And oh my gosh, it's not going to make the movie. And I thought that was a good shot.
That was two months ago.
Yeah. And then you're just like, it's devastating, you know? So there's so much of that, you know? Like,
Of course.
And now you can just look at the footage on your iPhone, you know?
We got it. We got it.
Yeah, sweet, you know? Yeah. So it was different back then, for sure.
Yeah, that's crazy. Was there ever a time, and I just realized this year with Mouse that if he did well with his movie, right? Like if he selected the right guy, it's Devin or whatever, and then he blew him up in his movie, there'd be a phone call where he'd be like, all right, Devin, where are we going? And then Devin be like, I'm going with MacDog.
That would happen. They would jump like film crews and stuff like that.
But that would also be the
sponsorship stuff too, probably.
There would have been a time where you would have called MacDog and been like, where are we going this year? And you're like, and he's like, I got the new kids and we'll see. We'll see if we'll maybe get you to.
Yeah, I kind of, with Mac, I just knew, dude.
You knew.
Oh, dude.
You knew. You weren't calling him, being like, bro.
I'm like 40, dude. I'm like 40 something, and like I can see what, you know, JP Walker's doing, and I'm like that. I'm not doing that.
Like, I'm not doing it. Don't call me. He's calling. Like, where do you want to go? And you're like, I'm just
free riding. I've always loved it. You know.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
When I did step away from being a pro rider, you know, to get behind the scenes with Burton and industry stuff, like,
yeah,
I felt like I just didn't want to document it anymore. I didn't want to put my energy into that, because it's 6 months out of the year where you're, that's all you got to do, and selfishly, and I had kids, and I couldn't be that selfish anymore, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
I had to look at it differently, but I still loved, and I still do, love free riding. And free riding to me is riding natural terrain that's not man-made, that you can kind of do whatever you want with it, whether it's a powder face or just a tree run or a cliff or whatever it is, but it's totally natural. That's what, to me, is free riding.
Yeah.
I think that can be at a ski resort, like a resort. Like, sure. You can have free riding at a resort that's kind of untouched and stuff, but like most of the free riding to me is away from a resort. And I still love it.
How do you access that now? Still split boarding?
Mostly snowmobiles, and split boarding too. So the last probably 3 or 4 years of filming, I would have a regular board and a split board on my snowmobile every day.
Dope.
Every day. Yeah. And if we're out in an area and we're talking about stuff, we're looking at stuff, and look at that cliff to that spine, that little thing to that. I'm like, cool. And I'd put my split board together and I'd start hiking. And I'd, because you couldn't really sled to that area or whatever. But if we were building the jump or we were hitting cliffs or whatever, I would use my normal board. So
yeah.
That's kind of how I did my last probably 3 or 4 years.
And then were you guys camping out?
And you know what else a split board is good for is building jumps. So Kevin Jones used to have me come and build jumps, because you put your skins on and you stack the jump, right? And then you just use a split board and pack it all down. We just walk up and down.
Oh,
and it's perfect. It's the same thing as your snowboard, right?
Exactly.
So split boards are really good to build jumps. UC used to love that too. Like, oh, Killer Dave's here. You put a split board together and make a jump, you know? Like,
that's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so fun. So would you guys do overnighters? You go out like right from the beginning and
overnight camp stuff?
Yeah.
I would do that for fun, you know? I love that.
It wasn't a part of
not
your...
Not to film, no.
It wasn't a part of your film regimen or anything.
I mean, we lived... If you got up at 5 a.m., you could be standing on top of a line when the sun's coming up.
Yep.
So most of the stuff in Tahoe you're filming is north-facing.
Yep.
And you need to get it from 7 to 9 a.m.
Yep.
There's a few places that are kind of secret that are west-facing that you can film in the evening.
Yeah.
I've taken Terry there a few times and stuff. But it's
nice.
That's like an afternoon place. You don't even get there till 1 in the afternoon, because it doesn't even come in the light until... 4 o'clock, you know, so
because
it's totally west facing.
So you would know these things because you're filming and you're looking at stuff.
Years and years and years.
Following the light, like
making a lot of mistakes.
Yeah, yeah,
a lot of mistakes.
That's unbelievable, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So still now you're actively surfing a lot, right? Like you live
surfing, yeah.
5 minutes from an epic break, and then
I surf a lot. My kids surf a lot, and
yeah,
I mean I surf. You know, for probably 8 years before I even started snowboarding. I didn't start snowboarding until I was 21.
Yeah.
All through high school, I surfed and stuff.
And then whatever happened with the surfing on snow? Nobody else did it.
What was it like? Oh, you mean
what
when
was
I
it like
surfboard?
When you actually? Yeah,
that surfed. In the movie. Yeah, that was just movie. Funny. We were at Mike's house and he had a couple surfboards in his garage and yeah. We're dumping out and I'm like, dude, we should ride this. And he's like, oh, and I just next thing you know, I'm like taking that thing and standing on it and riding down the mountain on it. It was pretty fun, but.
I guess pow surfing now is a whole other thing.
I pow surf a lot. It's killer, dude.
It's so fun, right? Yeah, like the powder hull that you were talking that Craig was trying to design. Mm-hmm. Like they're doing stuff like that on these pow surfers, and it makes a lot of sense.
Real basic terrain or thing is fun, you know. But I still love like snowboarding in powder and like having that feeling of. You know, being connected and riding. So I like both, but I definitely snowboard way more than I pow surf. But you got to have a lot of time on your hands to like pow surf.
I was at Great Northern with Al Clark. Mm-hmm. And
Al is awesome. Yeah.
And they had so many pow surfers there and everybody had to take a run. Yeah. I took a short section of really steep, good stuff with it. Mm-hmm. And I get it and I love it. I feel like I've got a long way to go to get that perfect
I still feel that way. I still feel like I'm getting better as a snowboarder.
That's rad.
You know, on the snow, like turning and riding, and I definitely feel like I have more
reading the terrain. For me, the thing that I'm getting better at is that Jerry Lopez thing where you're like zen out there, you know, like I have a lot of trouble like, oh, somebody else is gonna bag my line, or you know, like I'm like kind of in a frantic way.
That's because you're riding at ski resorts.
Exactly. yeah. That's awesome. Know. I almost had a day sledding in Tahoe with Hatchet.
Oh, come! You should come out if you're ever in Tahoe. Come out, like I still ride with Mike. You know,
good
like, for fun. We go out to some of the places we used to film and stuff, and we just free ride, which is killer. Like
that's even.
And
better,
Mike was so epic. This is another thing that I'd love for people to hear is Mike was so he's such a snowboarder. That he would always have to ride, like even in Tahoe, right? We'd be filming until like it would get dark. You know, I was talking about the light, you know, and we'd film all morning and it'd be like 1 o'clock and it's shaded and we're ready to go. And like Mike's like eating a sandwich, like ready to go. And I'm like, okay, dude, it's your turn. Cause he was shuttling me all morning, right? For filming.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, bro, I got you. And I would just take him on hot laps on a sled.
That's amazing.
And just give him like 10, 12 runs.
Sick.
And he loved it, you know, and even in Alaska, he would like, it was like mandatory, like take free runs, you know,
that's
like
really
we
cool.
would like, you know, film in the morning and the good light. And then around midday, the sun's all high in the sky and Mike would just leave his camera bag, you know, like it would be like me and Johan and Doug Coombs and Mike Hatchett doing free runs for like 3 hours. Like
that's
it was insane, you know, but you have to do that. Cause Craig used to tell me like, if you're not taking free runs when you're out filming and photo shooting, you're just faking it.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you at least have to like, do it, like take a run, take a real run for yourself and love it. Because if not, you're just faking it.
Yeah, it's incredible.
You know? Like, because photo shoots and filming, and it's kind of fake, like, sort of, you know,
hey,
not
man.
Real. Like, Travis Rice, like that, he's not faking anything. Like,
sure.
He does that all the time.
Sure.
But, like, you know, when we were like setting up cliffs and hitting jumps and building the big cheese wedge and just hitting that over, it's like,
to get your hand on the board,
you know what I mean, like
turned properly towards the camera with the backdrop proper. Yeah,
you're kind of faking it.
It's posing. Yeah,
you're posing, and you're going through a lot of effort and a lot of work to do a stunt that's going to make a movie.
Yeah,
that people are going to watch, and that people aren't going to see or understand that week and a half of failure,
right.
And then you finally get that one thing. Yeah. They don't see that.
Yeah, I think Nicholas talked about that on his episode actually that. You know, you get that shot and then you think, great, I'm going to get another one tomorrow. And then it
doesn't work like that.
And then it might be a year between getting a shot good.
If you get, if you got two shots in a day, that's like the best day of your life. really, it was, you know,
usually
if you're getting in a month, if you could like log like seven shots, that was huge.
You're a professional snowboarder and you're killing it.
Yeah,
that's incredible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What an amazing amount of effort. Yeah. Yeah. Cause we're watching the videos going, okay, you know, watch it. It takes 40 minutes and we're like, okay, next, you know, great. Mm-hmm. Good job guys. What's the next one going to be?
But that time, all those times, like now it's funny cause I don't think about it a lot, but sitting here thinking about Mac Dog and what he did for the sport and what Mike Hatchett did for the sport, it's like, wow, man. Like, they, because really, I look at movies now and it's the same thing we're doing. It's just a little different, but like, they're kind of going the same jumps. They're kind of hitting the same sort of stuff, you know? Like, I mean, don't get me wrong, the pro snowboarders right now today are killing it. They're the rail guys are just nuts.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And you know, there's a handful of like still guys that are free riding that are insane.
Gnarly.
And
yes.
It's just Mac Dog and Mike Hatchett, I think. And there's other filmers too, but those guys did a lot to push the sport, you know. Mac Dog in the freestyle realm of taking jumps and building jumps and going to cities on handrail trips and spending, you know, months in the city on filming handrails and all that. He got those riders to do all that. And then Mike Hatchett, same thing with Alaska and free riding and, you know, Johan's part. And like, that's a whole nother episode. I'll talk about that forever. But like, really,
were you up there for that?
I was with Johan that whole time. I saw that, all that with my eyes, dude. It's burned into my soul. Johan was the opposite of me.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was calculated. Yeah. I didn't want to get hurt.
Yeah.
I learned from Craig Kelly. I wanted to take the most eye-pleasing line. I wanted to like make snowboarding look good. Yeah. That's what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
Johan was just like raw and just like an animal. And you kind of had to shoot him like a wild animal.
Yeah.
Like, he would just go up something. You didn't know what he was going to do. And he would just like naturally do a backside three off a 45 footer into a pocket and just come out with the slough on both sides and just no problem. Like, he didn't know that was there. Right. He didn't know anything. Right. Like, he just adapted to it and he made it work. And that was his TB5 part, was that.
Yeah.
Like, literally, it was insane. He's never been to Alaska before. He was a half pipe kid.
Yeah.
Before that year.
Yeah. He said on his interview that he went back to Alaska years later to try and do it again, you know? But he had to go, and he was paying him for his own way.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to go with like the general public.
No, you can't do it. You can't do that. Johan can't do that.
Yeah, no, he was bummed. He was like, it was a waste of money. No.
He was the best.
Yeah.
I mean, at that time, and like, I can't even explain it in words, but you know, he was a halfpipe kid, freestyle halfpipe kid from Sweden, and he went to Alaska and just like, his eyes just lit up, and it was just like he literally didn't know what he was doing, but he just was so talented and natural that that's what he did in that movie. And
that's so rad.
Unreal.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to go visit those guys in northern Sweden where they're in that resort.
Yeah. Cause that trip was, it was me and Victoria and Johan in a heli with Mike, and then Tex Davenport. I think either Tom, it was Tex, Matt Goodwill.
Oh yeah.
And I think Tom Burt in the other heli with Tom Day filming or something like that.
Yeah.
But that was like the group, right? And we were going up as rookies. Like, we don't know what we're doing. Mike's like, yeah, you should come up and get your feet wet in Alaska. And we're like, okay, cool. And like, we were free riding in Tahoe.
Yeah.
You know, and like getting shots and doing pretty good. So he's like, you guys should come. And we're like, okay. So next thing you know, Burton, Eric Koch, the team manager, is like, okay, we're booking tickets to Alaska, and we fly in, and it was the best year Mike told me he's probably ever seen. It was like 13 days straight, Bluebird, powder to the road every day.
Oh.
We were staying at the Sena
Lodge
there, and it was just, I was just like, is this for real? Like, you know, like every day was insane.
Were you as afraid as...
I was as scared.
Yeah.
Shitless.
Rankwitz said that he couldn't sleep when he was up there.
Every run, every day I'd wake up just every like, day, oh every my run. Gosh, this could be my last breakfast I'm eating, you know, like.
Really?
Pretty
that
much,
was the
dude.
Feeling.
Pretty much.
Was it like quiet in the, in?
No, no, it was just, I was probably maybe just me. I don't know if Johan was scared or, you know, Tex Davenport was scared because those guys are gnarly, but I was just like freaking. I was like getting dropped off in a peak with Doug Coombs, you know.
Yep.
And he's like, okay, there's just your spine, that's the spine that's going to lead into that thing, and if you, but don't go left, because if you go left you're going to die, and like you know, and I'm trying to film it. I think it would be different if you weren't filming it, but if you're trying to film it, you're trying to like ride it
properly,
with flow and like fast, because it's going to make the movie, you know.
You don't have any speed burns.
You can't
yeah,
you can't throw it sideways halfway down. You gotta like turn, and that's what Noah would do. He's turning, even though he's maybe scared and trying to figure out where he's going. He's still turning on that blind roller. He's turning on that blind roller, you know, even though, and he's looking past it. But yeah. I used to just throw it sideways in the beginning. Oh, God, where am I going?
Yeah,
that's where, you know, I used to fail a lot.
Yeah.
And Noah kind of taught me, like, no, you got to, like, flow into that thing. Like,
yeah.
So it'll be a shot in the movie instead of just on the trash and the editing bay floor, you know?
See, I'm a still photo guy because you don't need much. Stills are so easy.
Dude, I used to love that. Go with Jeff Curtis and just shoot stills.
Just make it look nice.
Best day ever.
So mellow.
Curtis was awesome, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You've worked with a lot of amazing talent.
They're still my friends. They're still like, when you do stuff like that, like kind of what I've been talking about, you're like, it's like your brother, you know,
it's
like, I'm tight with those guys. I'll do, if Jeff Curtis called me to come fly to Australia to do something, I would leave right now.
You'd go.
And if Mike Hatchett called me, needed something, I'd do it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Same with Mac Dog or any of those guys, the riders I've been with, like, cause it's true. Like it's almost like, I could see how like military guys are like that.
That's it.
You know, if you went to war with somebody, like you're connected.
Yep.
And I kind of feel the same way in some parts about filming, like people I filmed with.
No, it makes
like,
total sense.
Like I'll do whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know? Mike Jacoby told me off mic that the year that Craig passed, Craig had called and talked to Mike and said, "I got this great opportunity for you, Mike," because Mike was flying planes in Alaska, and that's that same brotherhood. That's that same bond. Like those guys have been in helicopters together. They've been on the Burton team when it was like Mike and Brush and Keith.
Yeah.
And that was that. That was the whole team. Yeah. Craig and those four dudes, right?
Yeah.
I mean, not the whole team. That was the whole A team that was filming those.
I'm sure that like the new kids, you know, the people that are filming now, they probably feel the same way, you know.
I hope so, yeah.
I hope they do. I'm sure they do. I mean, if they're going on the streets and filming handrails, they got to be tight with their buddies. They're you know.
Yeah.
Could possibly die or break a leg
or
whatever.
Gnarly stuff. Yeah.
You know,
hearing Craig talk about being Craig McMorris being there when Mark hit the tree.
Oh, yeah.
He was just like,
yeah,
that's when it's your brother. Yeah. It's just like, oh my God, everybody goes into that like kind of military mode. Yeah.
I hate when bad things happen in the backcountry. It's tough.
Yeah, of course, because you're in the middle of nowhere and it's your friends. And it sucks.
Yeah.
No, answer it.
Should I answer it? Okay, hold on.
Yeah,
Ford.
Hey,
hey, I'm doing an interview here with F and Rad with Eric. He wants to talk to you tomorrow.
Okay,
if you're around.
What's F and Rad?
Yeah, exactly. Well, let me call you in a little bit.
Yep. Cool.
Okay. Later.
He's in. Can hear it on the mic.
Yeah.
You've had a really, really great life. And the transition to working at Burton as a, what was your first role?
I don't have a title, but
No. Did you get a title at first?
My title's on my driver's license.
That's it. It's like
my name, right? But I work with North America sales marketing, basically.
Yeah.
All the reps in North America.
And that was the first job did you have to apply or anything?
No, it was a little complicated. Well, I was a rep and stuff in the industry before I was a pro snowboarder, right?
Sure, so but then...
When I was done with being a pro snowboarder, I'm like, hey, Laurent Potavon was there and Jake, and I had conversations with them. I'm like, hey, this is what I want to do. I want to be involved, you know, not as a snowboarder, but I have a lot to offer.
Yeah,
you know, this company, and that's how that happened. And that was at the beginning when kind of he was diversifying into other brands, Channel Island, surfboards, you know, Analog was a big part of what I worked with for years. So there was a lot of different things I did, you know, but now I'm basically working with sales and marketing in North America. Yeah.
Rad.
Yeah.
And so you've been able to just stay with the same company, which is...
Yeah,
it's pretty rare. You know what I mean? In our industry, a lot of people bounce around or, so.
Well, I believe it. I just believe in it, you know, like, I mean, Jake's part of this company big time. His DNA will never go away, you know, and his thought process, how he loves snowboarding. I love snowboarding. He taught me how to love snowboarding. Like I'm going to share that with everybody I come in contact with if I can. Because I love the sport, I think it's awesome. It's not a business to me, really, in my brain.
Right.
You know, even Jake, like, I know it was a business for him for sure, but it wasn't. It was more than that. It was, he loved it so much. He loved the feeling of it, doing it, seeing people do it, you know. So, I mean, as long as I have something to contribute, I'll hopefully be around snowboarding in some aspect, you know.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Well, thank you for doing, we did for an sure. hour. Thanks, Dave, for being on the show.
Sounds good.
I'm sure I'll have you on again.
Right on. Anytime.
Later. F and Rad shout outs this week to Crystal from Intuition Liners. Thanks for letting me use the cabin. Shout outs to Nick from Salmon Arms as well. He's had a lot to do with the cabin the last few years coming up and working really hard. Buy some Salmon Arms gloves, buy some Intuition Liners, guys. Special thanks to Dave Downing for doing the show this week. He hooked me up with Jason Ford for an interview, which I recorded on a beach. And you know what? The audio was not great, and the batteries died in the middle of it, and I lost half of that. So Jason and I have agreed to do an interview for next year, sometime in the future. I haven't listened to what I have. I have 20 minutes up top, and there's one story he tells about the transition from Burton to Ride that is so good. If it's not gone, I'll put that out as a bonus episode. Going to be a bunch of bonus episodes coming out from the No Show, and be sure to come back next week for another regular season episode of the F and Rad Snowboard Podcast, presented by Vans and brought to you by SIA Productions.